Welcome to Scrappy ABM. This is your podcast with practical playbooks that don't break the bank. In this podcast, we dig into the exact playbooks that ABM practitioners are using today to get their first ABM program off the ground. We'll dig into how they're using their current tech stack in order to create scrappy programs that rely more on creativity than new technologies. So if you're looking for how to get ABM off the ground in your organization in the next 90 days, let's dive into this episode. Why, hello, and welcome to this week's ABM AMA. I'm incredibly excited to be here. Today, we're going to primarily focus on sales and marketing alignment. That said, if you've got questions, feel free to drop those in the chat. We are here to specifically answer any questions that you may have as you're looking to build out your account-based marketing programs. And again, for quick context, my name is Mason Cosby. I'm founder of a company called Scrappy ABM. We've helped about 20 to 25 clients in the past 12 months build out their first ABM program that actually was successful. We have about a 90% client satisfaction rate and end up actually helping clients generate pretty tangible, sourced, continuous revenue through repeatable processes that actually align marketing and sales. That said, speaking of aligning marketing and sales, that is generally where ABM fails. Again, if you go look at all the recent research and data that is often coming out from companies like ITSMA, it's the number one reason that ABM fails. And we keep talking about it. And for so many people, they're like, we still haven't solved this? Like, this is still a problem? And it is. And the primary reason would be two or three kind of foundational things that need to be adjusted. So there's three kind of flavors when it comes to the challenges on why marketing and sales fundamentally aren't aligned. So the first would just be historically, marketing hasn't actually delivered pipeline that is tangible, that actually delivers closed won revenue for sellers. And when I talk about this, marketers sometimes get a little bit offended because they're like, well, I do so much work. Like, we put on all these webinars, we support all these events, we run all this paid media programs, we run all this social content, we run all these blogs. Like, we're doing so many things, and our sales team just never appreciates it. And yes, you're doing a lot of things, but those things aren't turning into revenue. And more specifically, they aren't showing the early signs of success. And for sellers, early signs of success would be lists that we can outbound to that actually create a meeting on the calendar, or just meetings on the calendar themselves. And for some marketers that may or may not have actually been in a revenue generating seat specifically, like a sales seat specifically here in the past couple of years, you may not remember what it's like to be a seller and to open up your calendar on a Monday and to have zero meetings, or to have one meeting and have pipeline that's completely ghosted you and has stalled out and isn't generating any kind of results. Because as a seller, most of your compensation is directly tied to what you kill, is directly tied to what you close. So again, if you're a seller and you wake up on a Monday and you go to your calendar and you've got nothing, and the marketing's just talking about, we've created all these webinars, we've created all these blogs, we're creating all these things that's generating a lot of interest, but that interest isn't delivering anything for them. And then you come with a shiny object that is account-based marketing that promises 70% increase in pipeline velocity, upwards of 70% increase in right-fit customers entering into pipeline. If you start to promise these things and you've never delivered previously, why would sales believe you? So that's the first reason that often marketing and sales just simply aren't aligned. And we'll come back to how you solve that here in just a moment. The second reason is fundamentally, they aren't compensated to care. And that sounds really depressing at times. But I was talking with a couple of clients over the past few weeks, and a large part of what they're asking for support in their ABM program is actually, hey, we need to adjust our sales comp. We need to get sales incentivized to actually go after some of these accounts. And the example that I've given a couple of times is there's a client and a client base for one of our clients that actually closes at a much higher rate. So they're closing this subset of customers that are SMB in nature at about 35%. And then there's this other subset of customers that's more mid-market enterprising that's closing at sub 10%. Well, these customers that are closing at sub 10% that are more mid-market and enterprise type clients, they have an exponentially higher lifetime value, and they end up creating more revenue and profit for the organization in the long term. but they just close at a much lower rate. Whereas your SMB type clients, they're closing at a much higher rate, but they only stick around for actually 3 to 6 months. So they're churning pretty quickly, which ends up losing the business more money. What's terrible for these organizations is that their sales team actually gets compensated more for closing these accounts and these companies that have a lower lifetime value than for closing accounts that have a higher lifetime value. And at the end of the day, marketing may be trying to build programming that's aligned with business objectives, which is we need to close higher lifetime value accounts, not immediate revenue accounts. But sales compensation hasn't adjusted. And as a result, fundamentally, marketing may actually be building business-based objective type programming, but the way that sales is compensated does not align with it. And as a result, sales is not buying in, and they're not focused on these deals that are going to close at a smaller rate but have a higher lifetime value because they make more money doing something else. That is not something that marketing can generally solve. That's an executive level problem, which ties into generally the second reason why ABM fails that we talked about last week and we'll talk about in more detail next week, which is a lack of current resourcing. So if you are a marketer trying to get your sales team involved and on board with building out these programs, but they make less money helping you, of course they're not going to be aligned. Of course they're not going to get involved, because why would they? They make more money in other places. And sellers, not in a very negative way, but in a very tangible way, are very money motivated. That's why they're in sales. So if you change the compensation structure in such a way that it incentivizes them to take right actions that align with business objectives, that should be how your ABM program is built, then as a result, what ends up happening is your sellers will follow along. They'll get aligned. So those are the first two reasons why marketing and sales generally don't have that alignment. The last reason that we've seen fairly consistently would just be sellers, again, very protective of how their pipeline is running. They're very protective of their specific accounts. And again, it makes sense. If they close these deals or they lose these deals, that is how they make their living. So if they've not historically partnered super well with marketing and they're already doing okay, like they may not be crushing their quota, but they pretty consistently come in at quota. They're a little bit below, they're a little bit above, they're middle of the road. They're just doing well enough that they don't have the desire to experiment with something new, because even though what they might be doing is hard, and again, they might be doing a lot of cold calling, they might be doing a lot of outbound emailing, they might be doing a lot of social selling that's super labor and manual and very intensive, and it's super hard work, and they might be doing essentially awareness to acquisition for specific accounts entirely on their own without any support. And again, might be super hard, but they know it, and it's comfortable, not from the perspective of comfortable as like it's easy, but it's comfortable because it's known. And when you start to incorporate this idea that in addition to all the things you're going to be doing, we're also going to add specific dedicated marketing support to engaging these right fit accounts so you can educate them more easily, that might be scary for a seller that's just right there in the middle. And they're like, well, no, historically, I've been able to manage the entire journey. I've ensured that I know every single touch point and every single piece of content, every single piece of information that they've gotten has come directly from me. I've controlled the entire journey from beginning to end. If you make that transition, that's terrifying. Because for some of these sellers that are in enterprise deals, some of these sales cycles are taking a year, two, sometimes 3 years. We were working with a client a few years back that had a 10-year sales cycle. It's just a huge deal. So if you're saying to a seller, we'd like to get involved to help accelerate that deal, it's not just that they're getting some support on these accounts. These are their personal relationships. They hold very dearly. Because inevitably, bestsellers actually care about the relationships and they care about the people that they're working with. They actually probably develop some great rapport with these people. And it's not even from a perspective of like, I don't trust you. It might just be like, but I know these people. I care about these people. And I want to make sure that like they hear from me. And then I maintain and hold that relationship. So again, in that context, there's a misalignment there because this is a major transition for a lot of sellers to get dedicated, specific, intentional marketing support, where in a lot of ways, they may not control the entire narrative. And they're afraid, if you screw this up for me, it's my relationship. It's my commission. It's my ability to provide for my family sometimes. So again, if you're a marketer, some of the ways that you overcome this lack of alignment with sales, is you actually open up the floor and ask, we want to help you make more money. We want to help you close more accounts. We want to accelerate some of these deals. We want to make sure that you get the support you need. What are some of your hesitations? And the other thing is that you may actually have to ask sales leadership to facilitate and foster some of those conversations, because it may be uncomfortable to say to somebody to their face, I just don't know that you're going to get it right. I think you might screw it up. And that hurts me more than it hurts you. So as marketers, we have to have a level of empathy with our sales teams to understand all of their potential hesitations and to ensure that they have a level of clarity, again, that we're here to be supportive, that this is a partnership, that this is not a mandate, but it's something that is, we desire to ensure that you are met where you are today, get the support that you need, maybe some better content, maybe some better ability to actually engage multiple personas within the decision-making group to ensure that you are able to accelerate these deals and then we all win together. Especially for a lot of great sellers, they're great sellers because they know how to sell and they've been able to make it on their own in a lot of ways. Getting team support is scary because, again, you lose some bit of control. You involve more people. You may have somebody that says something on a call or says a specific message that is not what you would have communicated. And as a result, you end up screwing up the deal. It happens. It's terrifying as a seller when your commission is then on the line. So as marketers, again, coming in with a level of empathy to say, hey, I want to hear what your hesitations are. I want to understand where you feel like you need support. I want to understand where you feel like, hey, I've got it. And to be really intentional and to actually be a little bit slower. Like, it might be that some of your initial programming is actually focused on operationalizing current processes that sellers are using to actually have an account-based approach, but are not documented, are not systematized, are not living in the tech stack, are not currently reportable. And as a result, you end up building trust because you've taken something that may have taken them hours upon hours and made it actually a more streamlined and simple process that they can use repeatedly. It might be where you get started to start to build some of that trust, to build the momentum in the right direction. So again, coming with a level of empathy, asking, why would this not work for you? What are some of your hesitations? Have you tried ABM in a past organization and it didn't work? What went wrong? And just seeking to understand so that you can then actually come at it from a sales perspective and say, hey, I get where you're coming from. I understand some of your hesitations. Here's how we're going to ensure that those hesitations are directly addressed. So again, if you're a marketer trying to build the ABM program for the first time in your organization, you've got to have sales buy-in. The things that you can control are their level of understanding. It's also where you start. You probably shouldn't roll this out to the entire sales team. This should probably be a really focused approach on only a couple of sellers where you're specifically helping them in their situation. Then you actually build out the business case and then you can roll it across other teams. But I would start really small with a couple of sellers that might trust you. Other thing that you can't control that may end up becoming a problem that you need to get then executive leadership to buy in on is they're not incentivized to be involved. They're not incentivized to be engaged. So the question is then, how do I actually drive that engagement, likely through some support from a transition in their comp structure? If you can get that buy-in from a comp structure perspective, they're more likely to actually be involved and engaged in your programs. So hopefully it's helpful as you're thinking through, how do I actually drive this alignment with sales? Again, recognizing if they've owned the relationship from beginning to end in the past, this transition is going to be a pretty scary one. Additionally, recognizing, hey, if marketing hasn't historically delivered in the past, why would they trust me now? And how do you directly address that to ensure that they understand that things will be different now and actually outlining this, how it's different? And then lastly, understanding their current compensation. If you can address their current compensation, then they'll be more likely to actually buy in. Last couple of things, just for some quick thoughts on how to align marketing and sales. Again, coming from a perspective of empathy, deeply understanding the current challenges, and then identifying where you can support today with the intention of building trust early so that you can then over time continue to build out the programs in a variety of ways is a great way to ensure that you're actually getting that alignment early. And the last one, certainly not least, don't really target people that are doing well enough. I alluded to this already, but if they're doing well enough, transition is going to be scary because they're like, well, if I just do a couple more calls this quarter, if I get a couple more meetings in the pipeline, it's just well enough that they wouldn't be open to a change. But if they're doing really poorly and they need new support, they're willing and open to trying anything, or they're people that consistently hit their quotas, I'm like, shoot, yeah, I'll try something new. I'm already crushing it. You're telling me I can crush it even more? Let's try it. Those are generally where you're going to get the buy-in to actually try something new because there's not a risk for them of losing their massive commissions. They already are able to provide for their families. Or they're so desperate for new help and support that they're open to trying anything. So again, these are some ways that you can align marketing and sales to actually drive an ABM program internally. That said, if there's any questions, feel free to always reach out to me at mason@scrappyabm.com, or you can shoot me a message on LinkedIn. Thank you so much for being here today. I look forward to seeing you next week. Thank you so much for listening to this episode of Scrappy ABM. If you're looking for more content just like this, we've got a ton of other episodes that dig into how you can build programs using your existing tech stack. Additionally, if you have specific questions that you'd like to ask, we host a weekly live stream on LinkedIn called the ABM AMA, where you can join and get your questions answered directly by experts. And lastly, if you're looking for practical templates, guides, frameworks, and playbooks, check out scrappyabm.com, where we're building a library of resources that help ABMers just like you get their programs off the ground. Again, I hope you enjoyed this episode, and I look forward to seeing you in the next one.